south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Today, we're going to dive into part three of how to get off the power grid here in Latin America, or at least get self-sufficient enough power-wise. So you don't have to worry about those little annoying power outages that last for 2 or 3 seconds or even up to 30 seconds before it kicks back in again. Or worst case, if the power goes out for hours and hours, which rarely happens anymore, at least in most Latin American countries. And when it does, it's usually during the rainy season because the rainy seasons are so severe. There's lots of lightning and trees falling. So I'd say at least 90% of the power outages are not due to faulty grid or bad maintenance because, as mentioned previously, most all electric companies here in Latin America are at least 50% owned by first world international power companies that know what the hell they're doing. So maintenance, at least with telephone and electrical utilities, is pretty much up to snuff, first world style. For example, suppose it is the rainy season and your power goes out. It's been out for a half an hour now and you're getting worried. That's about the point where a gringo will call the electric company and say, "Hey, what the hell's happening? You guys asleep at the wheel or something?" Believe me, after a huge rain and electrical storm, they're not asleep at the wheel. They've just got so many calls and all their trucks are out. They got plenty to do. Here's a tip. If you're living in a gated, guarded community or subdivision, when your power goes out for, let's say, more than a half an hour, don't call the electric company first. Take a walk outside and see if the whole neighborhood's out. If it is, you definitely won't have to call the electric company. They'll know it. For one thing, your front entrance guards will call it in. But if you're the only house in the neighborhood that's lost power because lightning hit the pole next door, you have to call it in yourself because no one else will. You know, there's always an emergency number on your electric bill. If you call that and can't get through, that's probably because there's been big sections without power. But believe me, because most Latin power companies are at least 50% private, you will get through eventually because private companies actually have customer service. So normally, after about a half an hour, at least long-term gringos and expats down here will phone up the utility company and say, "What the hell's going on?" By the way, Latinos might wait 4 times as long because, you know, historically, Latin societies are so used to having intermittent power outages. It's just part of living down here, and no one seems to panic, except us gringos and expats, especially the newbies. Oh, and speaking of local Latinos and when they really do start to panic, it's a kind of recent phenomenon that no one really gets upset when the power is out for an hour or two until the battery in their smartphone poops out. And when the grid's down, there's no way to charge it. And very, very few Latinos have an extra little battery backup for the cell phone. Sound familiar? Well, maybe it doesn't because you don't have power outages up in the States like they do down here. But even up by you, when you're out and about, you're always keeping an eye out for a quick charge at a docking station, aren't you? At least that seems to be an inbred concern with millennials and anyone born after, I'd say, the year 1995. Which in itself is rather odd. I was talking to a jarhead the other day and he said, "Johnny, I don't get this. We're taught in the military situational awareness. That means when you walk into a place, the first thing you do is look for the exits right away." Then he shook his head and said, "Johnny, I have little hope for millennials. They're not into situational awareness for security reasons. They're into it for smartphone battery top-off reasons." And he says, "I hate to see what's going to happen when a real crisis comes, but I can tell you who's going to survive. Not the millennials or kids born after that. Their phones might, but they won't." Oh, and by the way, that jarhead was talking about gender identity crap in the U.S. military. He said, "Behind closed doors, the regular grunts are up in arms about it, but they're ordered not to say a thing about it while off base." Then he said, "You know, Johnny, today I woke up and I looked in the mirror and identified myself as an alpha male." He said, "I do that every day since I was a tiny kid and my brain just started to function. I identified as an alpha male." He said, "You know, up in the States, some people would say there's something wrong with me." And then he said, and I had to laugh, "Today I wake up, look in the mirror and decide I'm not an alpha male. That's when I'm going to hide the knives, the ammo, and the razor blades." Then we had a little bit of a bittersweet discussion about all that's going wrong with the States and why when he musters out, and he said he had 7 years left till 20 and out, he was definitely going to get out of Dodge and move to Latin America. And Dodge, for him, was none other than good old Kalamazoo, Michigan. By the way, he said he'd served two Latin tours of duty, one at a U.S. base in Panama, another in Colombia. That's how he got his taste of Latin America and why he's coming down permanently when he gets his 20 years in. He'll be 39 then. Then I said, you know, Sergeant Tim, I was just thinking. If tomorrow I wake up, me Johnny, and I suddenly look in the mirror and I self-identify as a 65-year-old female ex-cop disabled war veteran, well, that means I should instantly be eligible for 3 government pensions, right? Not to mention all those senior discounts and handicap parking privileges. Of course, he laughed. It was just a stupid and ridiculous joke. Or was it? But I digress. You knew I would. Okay. Before we get deep into part 3 of how to get off the grid solar panels and those excellent lithium-ion batteries, that's exactly the kind of battery you want to use. Screw those old lead-acid batteries. Then there's chargers, controllers, cables, solar panel mounting, they call it racking. There's lightning strike and EMP protection. Yes, we'll be hitting on all that stuff, just stay tuned. But first, we have some very late-breaking, disturbing news out of Colombia. Now, you longtime listeners know I haven't been recommending Colombia for a lot of reasons, mostly because the gringos are piling in and it's getting more expensive. It's a great country, but they've also got a really tight U.S. connection and 4 military bases. You see military, U.S. military, when you're walking around in the big cities, which is not a good sign. No, they're not everywhere, but if you keep your eyes open and you're in a big city, you probably will spot a few. They're not hard to miss. These days, U.S. military personnel they send overseas, at least the grunts, are all buffed out, thick in the chest like MMA wrestlers, and all of them about a half a head taller than Latin military guys. That's just the way it is. A lot of light-skinned, sandy and blonde-haired, blue and green-eyed military gringos, too. Believe me, they just can't blend in. And even when they're out in the town like civilians, they've got that internal hoorah macho Marine boot camp thing going for them 24/7. They just can't shake that. A lot of them are really nice guys, but they've got this club and we're not in it. So again, the U.S. has 4 military bases in Colombia. Probably more, but that's all they're telling us about. All in the name of the long-lost drug war, of course. So if for you, that's not enough to cross Colombia off your Plan B list. Here's a story that showed up in every major Colombian newspaper just a day or so ago. Now, get this, all you Colombiaphiles, and let it sink in. There's a new law being discussed right now. It's being proposed by the Colombian Congress to ban private gold ownership and sales. Of course, it's meeting with some opposition. There's a lot of debate going on. But, you know, just the fact that someone's been able to get a bill like this started in Colombia, that it's even gaining any traction at all, is a pretty sad thing for freedom lovers. So what's next? A proposal to ban guns, for sure. You want to hear more? Listen to this. It says Attorney General Nestor Martinez wants to ban private gold sales and mining operations and return the monopoly of gold status to the Bank of the Republic of Colombia. All right, me Johnny here. This article was originally in Spanish, so there will be a few things lost in translation here, so bear with me. Anyway, it says, though some economists are saying it's a bad idea. Doesn't matter. Turns out the Attorney General has many politicians on board. Then it says, Colombia's new anti-gold proposal is in an effort to fight the organized crime elements that are behind illegal mining and sales of gold in Colombia. And it says, the Attorney General and anti-gold advocates in Congress are saying that Colombia's Banco de República should have the only legal monopoly on the purchase and sales of gold. However, if the law passes, there will be exemptions for things like gold jewelry. Part of the exact wording of the proposed new law, according to Minister of Finance Alberto Carrasquilla, the wording once again expressed the need for the government to enjoy the monopoly on purchase and sale of gold in order to prevent the precious metal from being bought and sold on the black market and used for money laundering. Again with the money laundering. Then there's a quote here from Colombia's Attorney General, the nation's top prosecutor. He says, as me and other officials have often stated publicly, current circumstances make it necessary to adopt these kinds of decisions that prevent the growth of illicit gold trading, which in our understanding necessarily involves the need to reestablish monopoly on the purchase and sales of gold in this country by only allowing the Bank of the Republic to handle and monitor those transactions. But here's what you didn't know, though you probably didn't know about the gold thing at all. Martinez, the nation's top attorney, says For the last 4 years, the prosecutor's office has been investigating the idea of outlawing the private sales and use of gold. Already, he says, they have prosecuted 4 international gold traders and more than 50 domestic suppliers who have allegedly laundered assets worth a total of $3.4 billion using gold. He said in a statement that private ownership of gold produces effects ranging from environmental degradation, if you're a miner, to the financing of illegal groups through front companies taking advantage of commercial activity for the benefit of organized crime, and to engage in extensive money laundering, saying that gold is the perfect anonymous exchange mechanism for these kind of illicit activities. All right, me, Johnny here. Though that law might never get passed, it might get shot down anywhere along the way. To me, just the thought of that kind of talk scares the hell out of me. Yet another reason you should really think twice before thinking about setting up your plan B in Colombia. As for my 2 cents worth, Colombia, a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. All right, now, just for a minute, I'd like to talk about Amazon. I get lots of emails from would-be expats, wannabes, gonna-bes, and expats living down here. They want some tips on how to use Amazon once they land here in Latin America and get settled in. Now, I have said a few things about Amazon in the past. I use it all the time. Best way, of course, is to have a Miami-based mailbox. You have it all sent there, and it's usually free shipping, and then your mail service sends it to your Latin country where they've got an office, and you pick it up or have them deliver it, and it's usually a couple of bucks a pound. And unlike some of the older services like mailboxes, etc., you don't have to buy a box. It's free. They make their money once the package arrives in Miami because you're paying the shipping. In past shows, I have gone into a lot of detail on the Amazon process for gringos and expats, and today, more news. Since Latin America is the land of lag time, they're just starting to get in on the Amazon thing. In fact, I can't tell you how many times someone said, "Hey, where'd you get that thing?" Whatever it is. And I said, "Amazon." They say, "You buy stuff from Amazon? Oh, I wish I could." My cousin or my tío, the rich guy in the family, gets stuff from Amazon, but unfortunately, I don't have access. Even if I did, I wouldn't know how to use it. Now, I'm talking about middle-class Latinos who obviously don't speak English, nor do they have an Amazon account or access to one. But man, they all know about it and would just love to get on board, but they don't know how or are too afraid they'd miss order or make a mistake, maybe a fatal mistake. For the average middle-class Latino, too many obstacles. Number one, they don't have a U.S. dollar credit card. Number two, they don't speak English. Which got me thinking, man, would that be a great gringo money-making opportunity? Give little seminars on how to use Amazon. And even if you couldn't speak Spanish, you could have someone translating it the whole time. Man, you rent a salon, 25 or 50 bucks a head, 2 or 3 hours, you'd have them packed in balls to the wall like a Shakira concert. The fact is only about 2 or 3% of upper-class Latinos have the ability to order from Amazon directly. The rest are wannabes, and that's your market. And get this, the 2 or 3% that are on Amazon already, they're just now starting to discover that so-called 5-star customer review rating system. And do remember, almost all the Latinos that make Amazon purchases go down to the local mail forwarding service and order from their computers, not from their own homes. So even within that small percentage of Latinos who order directly from Amazon, they don't use their own computers. They go down to the mail forwarding service office and order through their computers. That way they've got someone bilingual to help them and give them advice. It's not very good advice, but it is some help. That's another reason. If a gringo were to give an Amazon seminar, he would absolutely clean up. I mean, gringos always know best, right? Not to mention, Amazon's a 100% gringo operation. In the meantime, if you walk into one of the offices of one of the mail forwarding services, let's say you're in Panama or Costa Rica, Guatemala, whatever, you'll see there's one or two laptop computers open with the main page on Amazon. So you go there, you sit down with someone who can translate Spanish to English, you order that stuff through that person right there, gets shipped to the Miami box, and then ends up in your country about a week later. I'm just running through this kind of fast because there's a point I want to make here. And that is that small percentage of Latinos who are starting to use Amazon, and it's growing all the time, they're just starting to find out about the 5-star review system, which we longtime Amazon users know is totally bogus. That means Latinos are just like we were, let's say, 5 years ago or so when we first started using Amazon. We'd say, "Wow, look at all those 5-star reviews. It must be a great product." The point is, Latinos don't know that most of those are completely manipulated or even paid for. In fact, if you were to tell a Latino there were services you could contract to write 5-star reviews for your product, they wouldn't believe you. But these days, that's part of the marketing game. Though, knowing that, those reviews aren't entirely useless. Here's what I've discovered. I actually know a gringo in the marketing software business. He was recently involved with a marketing company that produced those kind of fake five-star reviews. He said, in truth, the only product reviews that mean anything, the only ones you should be looking at are the three-star reviews. What's that mean? For example, on Amazon, for every product, you'll see a consumer review chart in a bar graph and an overall rating. Let's say it's 4.5 stars. Well, you know, you can click on the 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5-star bar and see all those reviews. What you should do is just go to the 3-star reviews. Those are ratings that are not bought and paid for. The thing is, a 3-star rating is a neutral review, and you'd never want to buy a neutral review. You'd always want to buy 4- and 5-star reviews. 3-star ratings are almost always from real people who've used the product and bothered to write in. So then, using that logic, why not click on the 1- or 2-star bar graphs? They should be totally honest, right? Well, here's the problem. You know, there are chronic complainers in this world. I've got 2 sisters like that. 2 out of 3, not good, huh? And the ones that don't have much to do or have a lot of time on their hands will complain about anything, and they'll write into Amazon. Sure, there are some valid ones in there, too, but most of them are just kind of bitter complainers. For example, they'll order a computer in the color black. It'll come dark brown or dark gray. They'll complain about it, even if the computer itself is perfectly great, or if the box comes with the corner crushed in a little bit. Well, you know, they're all packed to handle that. Still, they'll write in and complain. And my friend says the worst complainers of all, women buying clothes, because they'll buy the clothes based on how they look on a beautiful, skinny, or curvy model who's 20 or 30 pounds lighter than they are. And when they get the thing and put it on, they obviously don't look like the girl in the ad. And many of those who've got a pretty crappy self-image anyway, or who may be having their time of month, well, there are plenty of peer-reviewed studies that show people who are depressed or having their time of month, and we should include buyer's remorse here, often they're a bit testy, irritable, and pessimistic, and that's how the reviews will come out. And he said it's been shown that people who are sleep-deprived will downgrade product ratings too. Really, think about how many people you know who are sleep-deprived. Are you? Oh, and one more thing about fake Amazon reviews. You know, 2 years or so ago, Amazon was starting to figure out that buyers suspected there were a lot of fake 4- and 5-star reviews. So, they added a little twist, a verified purchase tag. You see that a review is from a verified purchaser, and you think, hey, that's legit. He bought the product. It wasn't a freebie, so the review must be real. Well, not so fast. When you see a verified purchase review these days, that's not even valid. Tell you why. I personally have been contacted by manufacturers who sell stuff on Amazon. They say things like, if you buy this item and give us a nice review, we'll give you a 50% rebate off the Amazon price. In fact, I actually bought some Bluetooth earbuds that way. Got the product, got the rebate, they were fine, but I never sent in a review. Think about it. It was a verified purchase, even though I paid half of the Amazon rate. Now, you think after that, I'm going to write a bad review? Well, that's why I didn't write any. So then how many hundreds, if not thousands of people, has that happened to? Bottom line, read those 3-star reviews and skip all the other ones. All right, enough said about that. Let's talk solar and getting off the grid. Remember on last week's show I was talking about meter tampering in Latin America? And since smart meters are appearing on all new construction sites, it's almost impossible to tamper with them directly. However, it was mentioned that even if you have a smart meter, power can be stolen if one of the 110-volt lines is bypassed in the wall. Now, if you've ever taken a look at your own meter, there's a glass dome you read through on the old ones, or a glass window protecting the digital readout on those smart meters. Now, if you look closely where the meter is attached to its base on the wall, you'll see a tiny wire loop, a braided loop, like a small keychain, threaded into a bright blue, red, or yellow plastic tag that looks kind of like a plastic tag a farmer puts through a cow's ear. In the old analog days, it used to be just a piece of lead that was crimped with a special tool joining the two ends of the wire. That's the way a meter reader could tell if the meter's been tampered with, the seal's broken, because in order to get to the guts of the meter, you have to snip that wire. Then, when you mount the meter again, you have to put that wire back, but it can't be joined and sealed like before unless you have a special crimping tool. Therefore, the meter reader or anyone from the electric company could tell that the meter's been tampered with. But electrical engineers and techies know you can buy those little crimpers online too. So, way back in the old days, one of my engineering school buddies bought one of those things from an electronics catalog. Another one of my buddies found one at a rummage sale at a place called Seven Mile Fair. It was directly on the border of Wisconsin and Illinois. It was gigantic. Biggest weekly rummage sale in the Midwest, man. You could find everything, including a lot of stuff that fell off a truck. Remember, we're talking about Chicago now. So, way back when in the analog days, before there were smart meters, a friend of mine could snip that wire, get into the guts of the meter. There are ways to slow it down, you know? Of course, I'm not suggesting you do anything illegal, but the way to hack a meter is first you got to take that wire off and get into the guts of it. And once you put it back on and the wire's snipped, you got to have a way to seal it up again. And that's a huge deterrent for the average mischief maker. Because up in the States, the power companies don't have a sense of humor about such things. But if the average mischief maker couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again, well, engineering students with the right crimper, no problem. So what's that got to do with anything? Why am I bringing this up? Well, that's because there's so much meter tampering going on here in Latin America. You heard me mention that in the last show. And in talking to a Latino electrician who's actually performed some of these stunts here in Latin America, he told me, in most cases, it's not necessary to snip the wire. You just take two big pliers and you pull on the crimped connector. The wires detach. Then you take the meter off, do your dirty deed, put it back on, and slip that braided wire back into the hole that you pulled it from. Now, with a cursory inspection, it looks completely unviolated. But all one has to do is yank on that wire and it'll come right out and you'll see something's not right. And when I said, what about the crimper? He said, are you kidding? There's so many meters that have been messed with and other ones that just don't work right at all anyway. When the electric company finds a meter that's been screwed around with or damaged, they just replace it. He said there's no point in investigating. There are, in some of the barrios and pueblos, 2, 3, 4, even 5 houses getting power through one meter. So how can you fix the blame on anyone? No one will admit it anyway. Oh, and speaking of electric bills and Latino meter readers, you know, when you get your monthly bill, you'll see that you have to pay it by a certain date or they'll assess some kind of late charge, usually a buck or two. It's very cheap. So you usually have a whole month after the due date to pay before they add extra charges. And if you don't pay in the next month, they'll cut your power, disconnect you. Or so they say, but this is Latin America. But generally, in most Latin countries, that'll take 3 months of non-payment of your bill before you'll get cut off, and sometimes never. Same thing with your water utility bill. That is, if it's municipal water and the government's running it. If you're in a private subdivision or a private residential colony, they call it, colonia residencial, it's not municipal water then. It'll be a well run by your own subdivision, and if you don't pay on time, when they say they're going to cut you off, they'll do it. Or I should say, they'll give you a month leeway past the due date, then they'll cut you off. Because the guy in charge of the well and the reservoir and the pipes in your subdivision, the guy is called a fontanero, like fountain. His job is to keep the water and the pumps flowing and the tubes in good condition. In fact, most of the time, he'll be living in your subdivision. Even if you have mansions in a luxurious subdivision, he'll be in a little shack somewhere, way off the beaten path with his wife, kids, dogs, and driveway chickens on duty 24/7. That's why if you get behind and get a cutoff notice, on that date he really will cut you off, because he's not one of those lazy-ass slugs working for the municipal government water supply. He's a guy who's working for a private water service, so he can actually get fired for doing a crap job. Consequently, he's dependable, and you can usually find him around when you spring a leak. All right, speaking of electric company hacks that very smart and astute gringos and expats use to get over on the electric company, how about this? Not advocating this, but it's being done. If you live in a condo complex or residential tower, you'll find all the decent ones have an electrical auxiliary generator, usually a big-ass diesel one, the kind they use in hospitals, etc. It'll be outside, sitting in some enclosed space in a parking lot somewhere, and you'll hear it when it kicks in. It's automatic. When the grid power goes off for even 10 or 15 seconds, it'll fire up and you'll hear it. But you'll also notice, especially if you're in a big residential complex of, let's say, 10 stories and 50 apartments, chances are, if the grid power goes out and the generator's kicked in, if you walk through your apartment, you'll find in many cases, if you flick on the light switches, not all of them will turn on. But there'll be power to your kitchen, including your refrigerator, maybe one overhead light in the living room, your hallway light, and of course the elevators in your residential tower will be working. The thing is, you might have a huge 100,000-watt generator sitting out in a parking lot, but that's not enough to supply 50 apartments with all the electric needs they have. So when that building was designed, there was a secondary backup system wired to each apartment that only allowed for a couple of outlets to have power. with top priority being the elevator, because in most Latin countries now, you cannot build a residential tower with an elevator without having a separate backup diesel generator. So in other words, at least in the past 5 years, if an architect came in with a plan for a residential tower that had an elevator, there has to be a diesel backup generator in the plan. Makes good sense, because many Latin countries have momentary power outages. Imagine being in an elevator and the power goes off for a half an hour. Can't have that. So this is really one of the oddball cases where first world building codes are actually enforced. And that's not because Latinos are forward thinkers. It's because so many residential towers and condo complexes with elevators were built in the past without said auxiliary generators. And you can imagine living on the 10th or 14th floor and once in a while, the elevator doesn't work. So anyway, here's that little gringo power hack. If you live in such a residential tower, look behind your refrigerator where it's plugged in. That'll usually be an outlet that's on that separate auxiliary supply, so it's not metered. You get the idea? That outlet, for all intents and purposes, has free electricity. So go ahead, splurge, but don't overdo it. Oh, and by the way, next time you're in Latin America and you get into an elevator, look at the nameplate and see who made it. Well, it won't take you long to figure out it's all American, European, and Japanese names. Seems there's not a single homegrown Latin American elevator company. I wonder why. Probably the reason why there isn't a single Latin American passenger jet corporation either. I know, some of you smarties out there are going to say, no, Johnny, Brazil makes airplanes and jets. Well, that's true, but you know, the father of Brazil's aviation industry, his name was Alberto Santos Dumont. Well, his dad was an extremely wealthy Frenchman. Oh, and funny enough, the Brazilian history books say that he, Dumont, not the Wright brothers, had the first flying machine. Go ahead, look it up. Anyway, sorry I digress so much off the solar power theme. I promise next time for sure, a whole show on it. But before we sign off for today, don't forget, you can sign up for my July 2019 week-long Expat Insider Seminar. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's seminar link. You know, people are always saying it's the best way to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your own Plan B. And a big part of it is meeting a fantastic network of people too. The fact is, and this always happens, some of them will become your new best friends. Of course, we'll have repeat offenders, we always do. And for you first-time attendees, remember, as soon as you sign up, you're entitled to a one-hour phone call with me. That's part of the deal, too. That would be your time to ask me everything and anything you wanted to know about the seminar, about your Plan B, or about anything having to do with Latin America. So check out the info in the sign-up sheet. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's seminar link. See you there. You've been listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos.